James Howard Kunstler writes in a very blunt, in-your-face fashion, telling you what's about to happen, what is happening with regard to energy and our economy. And it seems to me, James, that in every, even biggest of disasters, there are winners and losers. So there are going to be areas that will do and people that will do better than others during this long emergency. Can you pick out any of the winners or good places to be?
Well, this is a kind of fascinating aspect in reflecting on where we're going and what's going to happen with us. And, you know, of course, I don't pretend to have a crystal ball, but I think that there are some predictions that you can make that they're already pretty clear. This period I call the long emergency will be one of economic hardship, political turbulence, and some parts of the United States are going to do better than others. I'm rather pessimistic about the Southwest.
Yes, Phoenix, I read that.
Phoenix, Las Vegas, which you apparently live near.
Yeah, that's right.
The excitement will be over in Las Vegas. Tucson. These places are going to have really severe problems on top of the energy problems they face.
Because of?
Well, first of all, you're going to have severe problems with water. You're already bumping up against those problems, especially in the Las Vegas area.
That's quite right.
They're only going to be exacerbated by the problems that you have with petroleum and natural gas. It's hard to, you know, people think about cheap air conditioning in Phoenix. Phoenix is virtually unlivable without some kind of air conditioning relief. You get 100 days
That's right.
a year with three-digit temperatures.
Correct.
And it's really hard to take, and air conditioning has made it possible. Not just air conditioning, but cheap air conditioning that most people can afford at some level.
You're absolutely right.
And, so on top of that, and water problems, and friction with Mexico, which I think is going to continue and become worse, because as the American economy suffers and stumbles, the Mexican economy will suffer by another order of magnitude, and that will tend to increase the volume of people seeking to leave Mexico and come north, even if America is struggling. And I think that friction is going to increase and become a much more severe problem.
All right, let me interject one possibility here.
Yeah.
We are, after all, working on a number of other energy sources. Now, there's no magic bullet yet, but wind energy and solar energy and some of these hydrothermal, some of these other things we're working on, biodiesel, there's no single solution, but it looks like there may be an array of possible alternative solutions out there that could, at the very least, slow what you're talking about.
Well, this is the hope of many people. And indeed, there's plenty of reason to believe that we will be using virtually all of these things in the years to come. But I would direct you to a basic formula, which is that no amount of alternative fuels or renewables or systems for using them is going to allow us to run the United States the way we're used to running it, or even a substantial fraction of it.
All right, then let's talk a little
bit. And so it leads to a consideration of what actually might happen. And I think what you'll see is that some of these systems of solar, wind power, hydropower, there are more esoteric ones even, I think that some of them will be used on a very local basis, perhaps even on a household basis. But we're not going to just plug and play the equipment that we're now using. You know, we're not going to run the interstate highway system on biodiesel. I've been having a correspondence with biodiesel enthusiasts by email for the last 10 days.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm rather amazed at the things that they don't think about.
Like what?
Well, for example, if you reflect on the idea that industrial agriculture in America, based on fossil fuel inputs, is going to be in trouble. and that we're going to have to change the way we do farming and food production.
Right.
One of the basic conclusions you come to is that we are probably going to need more acreage to make up for the crop losses that we will have as a result of not being able to pour fertilizers and pesticides on the soil. We'll have to. It'll take more acres to grow an equivalent amount of food.
Okay, but that aspect of the long emergency is still quite a ways down the road. I'm talking about the time that we become short of fertilizers.
Well, wait a minute. I'm talking about biodiesel fuels as one of the alternatives that people are proposing. And
right.
A lot of people think we're just going to take, you know, X amount of acreage and devote it to growing soybeans or hemp or algae or something that will produce oil, and that will run the interstate highway system on these crops.
Well, not in totality, certainly, but it can help, right?
I wonder if we're going to be able to do it at all. This is the point I'm making, is that I think we're vastly underestimating the amount of cropland we're going to have to dedicate not only to growing food for human beings, but in addition, growing feed for working animals, which
right.
requires tremendous amount of dedicated cropland and acreage. And, you know, the biodiesel people have this kind of weird suburban view of things. It's a kind of a gee whiz. You know, here I am sitting in front of my computer having fun making algorithms and looking at the screen, but I'm not really thinking of the real world out there. And the real world is we're going to need a lot more acreage for growing food for humans and for animals. And I'm not convinced at all that there's going to be much land that we can devote to growing biomass for these biofuels.